Welcome to Talking in This Climate, a series where we discuss the different aspects of talking about climate change and environmental issues. We're a mix of environment students, graduates, and environmental communication professionals who are really interested in how we talk about climate in this climate. Each episode, we'll dive into a different theme, looking at things like language, the media, communicating through frames and metaphors, Indigenous perspectives on environmental issues, communicating across disciplines, issues of trust and misinformation, emotion, and how we can ultimately strive to become more mindful listeners, communicators, and agents of change. We're so excited for this journey and so grateful that you're here traveling with us. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Talking in This Climate. My name is Tim, and in this episode we will be talking about the impact of messengers when we're talking about climate and environmental issues. So far in this series, we've explored a lot about how information can be presented, but in this episode we want to drill down into who or what is conveying the message itself and start to uncover why this may be important and relevant if you want to be an effective agent of change. We acknowledge also the research done by the Monash Climate Change Communication Research Hub on non-persuasive communication, which is a strategy which leverages messengers that people already trust to deliver information about climate effectively. We end the episode by reflecting on what type of agency we have as listeners to potentially affect the messengers themselves by being active in the way that we want to be messaged. It'll all make sense in a minute. Just listen on, and I hope you enjoy this episode. I just wanted to ask what you all think when you think about a messenger and what a messenger is fundamentally and who a messenger might be. And this doesn't have to be in the context of climate or environment sustainability. So for me, I thought about Postman Pat, if you're familiar with that children's TV show. It's basically an animated show following Postman Pat and his black and white cat. And yeah, I don't know, I used to watch a lot of it. But it's interesting because if I considered Postman Pat messenger, he is actually not involved in the messages themselves in that sense. But I would still describe him as a messenger. He's neutral, so he gives out letters and parcels and things, delivering messages, but not actually involved in the messaging. So that was interesting. I don't know, just like, because so far, I guess, our assumptions about what we're talking about in terms of messengers have been thinking about, you know, climate activists or communicators and things. So that's what I thought of when I thought of what a messenger is broadly. Anyone else have any ideas that come to mind? Like if I say messenger, what comes into your brains? Facebook messenger?
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Facebook messenger. I don't think I personally think of a specific person or a TV show. I think about someone that has to convey a message. but that could be anything. So, nothing very specific. Maybe someone else has a more specific idea.
No, but I think that's still really valuable, Em. Like, to think that, like, that perspective I think is still really useful because I think it broadens what we understand is, like, messaging and messengers and what a message is and that sort of thing. So, yeah, even if it's not a specific person, I think that's still really important to think about.
Or a message in a bottle. Could be a bottle.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
That's where my head went. I was like, don't sing, Zoe, don't sing.
Yeah.
But no, I definitely think that a messenger is just someone or something that aids in guiding you on your journey. Like, I think that's sort of it.
Interesting. And would a messenger in that, in the way that you see it, Zoe, also be, would they take on like a mentor role, do you think?
No, they could be an inanimate object. They could be a breeze.
Right.
Like it's, for me, it's not even necessarily human.
That's really interesting.
because, like, you can be, you know, thinking about something and then you see leaves fall in a particular way as you're walking and you're like, ooh, brainwave. What about this? Like, I think messages come to us in a myriad of ways.
Yeah, that's interesting. So what would be, or if there are differences between, like, signs or signals and messages, or are they quite similar?
If we go back to my definition, it's quite similar because it's like a thing that guides you on your journey. So, both.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. So. Interesting. Because I've never thought of, like, when I'm driving and I see, like, signs saying, you know, 2 kilometers till the next turn or whatever, as a message, but it is a message.
Yeah,
it is a message.
Go, Fani. What's a messenger for you?
A messenger to me, guys, is someone who has something to say. So it can be anything, but if he has information that someone needs to communicate, for me, that person or that thing would be a messenger to me. Yeah. If that makes sense in any way.
It makes so much sense. And I feel like the way that we've all come to this, we're coming from such different perspectives. And it's like when you're trying to, like, have a conversation about ethics, and it's like, it's all dependent on the framework that you're applying to it. So for you, Fani, there's so much in, like, the duty of it, and the intention is to, like, portray the message. And so I'm just trying to not go into a little existential crisis currently. But I do think that messaging and, like, knowing who the messenger is, it's so subjective. Mm-hmm. And we tend to – had a big conversation yesterday about how we use universal words to describe experiences or things or beings that are not universal. And as soon as you've asked this question, Tim, we have all literally said a different answer.
I think another thing that stood out to me just now is the fact that we admitted that we ourselves can be messengers as well, right? Being part of this podcast, we have a voice and we convey messages as well. Ooh. So it goes both ways.
Are you a messenger if no one hears your message?
No one listens to this podcast, you mean?
If a bear shit in the woods, does it still happen? Oh, if a tree falls, sorry, that's the correct way to say that. But are you a messenger if no one is actually getting a message? Or conveying the message, being a messenger?
I think yes, Zoe, because when I was watching some documentaries earlier on how we send radio waves into the outer space, not knowing that if someone's going to pick it up or not, but we still send it in the hope that someone, if there is, will actually pick it up. So in that sense, your intentions to communicate does make you a messenger, I think.
And that sits completely in line with your definition as well. I love the continuity. So the bear did shit in the woods.
I think it's really interesting because it's also, if we're talking about reading messages and signs from, you know, perhaps inanimate things or natural things or the world or the universe, there's not necessarily an intention for, like, there's not the same kind of what we would call an intention that we would as sort of ascribe to an individual person or messenger. You know what I mean? If we were to go with kind of Zoe's definition or interpretation of messenger. I think the question also really brings up, what is the relationship here between an audience and the messenger, and how is a messenger defined by the audience and or the listeners? And I think that's probably something worth exploring as well. Bringing this closer to the threads of our podcast. So now within the context of climate change messages and messages about sustainability, why is it, or why could it be worthwhile talking about the messenger and or what we think of as a messenger within that context? Because some researchers think it's worthwhile. So the research from Bischoff, which is an article that we had a quick read of to sort of set a bit of context for this episode, and the research that's being done at the Monash Climate Change Communication Research Hub at Monash University with David Holmes, also suggests that there's an interest in what they define as a messenger for climate change communication. We don't have to talk about that research specifically, but I wonder why. Do you think it's worth talking about at all?
I think it's definitely worth talking about because, and I think that we've started talking about the messenger because this information going through the traditional sort of funnels or passages of messaging science to policymakers and to companies and to people isn't having a proportionate reaction. And so if you're looking at it from a systems viewpoint, it's like, okay, we've disseminated the information. There's not being a proportionate response. We know that the science is here and is factual. So there's something going wrong in this communication chain. So what can we look at that's in this communication chain? And a big element of that is messaging and messengers. So it's definitely a valuable consideration or thing to look at. Like, it's essential.
Yeah, I think you've summarized it pretty well there, Zoe. So I think a lot of the, let's say, conceptions or the initial conceptions of the perceived problem, which is that we are not getting the, as Zoe said, reaction or response in terms of action, change, that we are hoping or that we expect or that we desire, given a certain understanding of climate change and its severity. And so it's natural, I think, to then say, all right, what is the problem here? Like, what's wrong? What's missing? Is there something wrong with how we're communicating this? And then I think that is actually an entry point into a whole broader range of other things as well in terms of power and politics and culture and things.
Yeah.
But it does make sense, I think, as well to say, all right, do we need to be optimizing our messages? Do we need to be like reflecting on how they're being communicated? Do we need to actually start looking at who's communicating them? What are the forums? Who are the audiences? All these sorts of things. So, I think it's a really good starting point.
And a lot of the research, like a lot of the discourse, it comes down to this issue of trust, where there's a lot of mistrust between the information, like generally, even like speaking outside of environmental issues, there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation. So we're dealing with a systemic issue of messaging in this, what is this age called, isn't it, that now, like, just like fake news or disinformation? Because we used
post-truth,
post-truth, Anthropocene. There we go, in the post-truth world. Like, that's how cooked it sort of is.
If I can pick up on what you're saying,
yes,
Zoe.
Please.
So in a post-truth era, we can no longer trust the messages themselves, like in whatever platforms we find them, because they're less reliable than perhaps messages used to be. Traditionally, there's a lot more room for quote-unquote fake news and misinformation, disinformation, as well as like deliberate campaigns for that. So the focus really quickly is, maybe that's why, again, focusing on the messenger, it's very timely now, because the messages themselves have become unreliable.
Yeah, or perceived as unreliable because the audience, as in your common human being living on the world, has suffered and endured a hell of a lot of difficult things because of messaging. And so they're there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and it's not fair to ask people who have had injustices put upon them to do the work. Like, we need to do the work as messengers.
Did you have any examples in mind, Zoe?
So many. It's a common, this is like a common like justice framework. So like the onus is on who. So if you're working with like a marginalized group, so I've done a lot of work with populations who are sleeping rough and they're homeless and trying to organize their lives. It's not their job. You don't ask the systemically oppressed population to correct the system because they're fucking busy trying to make ends meet, protect their family, and be safe. It's the job of people with power to do better. And so that's why I think a lot of this research is taking on looking at the messenger and why it's very topical, because it's not up, like, it's tricky because we all do have a bit of responsibility, but it's important that people with power understand that their actions have repercussions and to take as much care and consideration to understanding not just their intentions but the impacts.
It probably relates also back to the research, and I think that David and his team has done around the fact that the general population in Australia, so the research is specific to Australia, that people have lost trust or don't trust government as much as they used to, maybe because of the failures that you've just outlined, sorry. Maybe of the failure to communicate by those in power, by those that are making the decisions, by those that are drafting and implementing policies. And it probably comes also down to a connection with each other. So not only the messenger feeling connected to the audience, but also the other way around, the audience feeling connected to the messenger and them understanding each other. I think there's a bit of a disconnect sometimes, depending on what you look at, but I think there's a bit of a disconnect there too.
And we see this with, because when you look at who the Australian public trusts, academics are in like the last three categories. And I think that's to do with the disconnect that society has with academics and researchers. And so even within that, there's a disconnect. And so it's sort of, how can we, lack of a better word, thicken these relationships? That phrase.
So were you saying that academics are listed as one of the least trusted groups?
Yeah, in Australian society, and like when it comes to voting, yeah. Yeah, like our little silo that we talk in here is, we aren't the majority. And I think that's important to note. And I think that's why, and like we've, when I've been discussing this stuff before, like critiquing, you know, what you think of the messenger and how you can receive messages actually like opens up who and what you listen to, because also just because you hear the message doesn't mean you need to act on it. But it's important to step outside and see messages in different formats and in different contexts, because there might be value.
I think what you're saying is very important, though, because I've recently realized that whenever I'm hearing a message from someone, I'm actually entering into their frame and actively trying to understand what they're saying, and at the same time trying to find things that doesn't sort of align with the story. So I think having the option to look at different frames of communication on the same thing sort of made me realize that how messages, the same message can be communicated in different forms and what sort of impacts they can have. So, yeah, I think that's a really important point there.
Maybe that's a way to isolate a little bit
what the actual impact of the messenger is in a context. So kind of maybe doing what you said, Fani, and taking the same message and running it through different messengers and seeing like the different reactions and different impacts. So like I think it's indisputable, like messengers have some form of impact. Well, I suppose it depends on how you define messenger, but yeah, you know, in the context of, you know, if we're talking about climate scientists or politicians or journalists, let's say talking about climate change, I think it's safe to say that the type of messenger does have an impact on how that message is taken up and whether or not there is going to be change off the back of that. Going back to what you were saying, Zoe, it's interesting. So do we think that, again, within the context of effective climate change messaging and communication, to be effective, do you need to have power? Like, do you need to be relatively powerful to have, like, you know, an effective message, do we think?
I have a question. What do you mean by effective?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because, like, is an effective message one that just, like, really powerfully resonates with, like, some people? Or is an effective message one that, you know, gets us to reduce our emissions and, you know, avoid 2 degrees? Or is an effective message one that, like, gets a particular policy through? Or, you know, like, what's an effect? What would be effective?
Yeah, that's a very important question. Obviously, it depends on context. I think if I was to speak quite generally, reflecting on maybe my own, you know, communications and things, I suppose ultimately it's to have an emotional effect or impact on someone else so that they come to a realization, or maybe that they believe what I believe. So maybe I would judge an effective message or an effective messenger as someone who's able to allow the audience to effectively see through the eyes of the messenger, you know, sort of the same issues, the same framing, the same concerns, the same priorities, and therefore see the same need for action, maybe.
Are you saying basically a messenger, so an effective messenger has their audience care about what they're talking about on an emotional level?
I'd say that'd be part of it, yeah. I suppose there's a difference between listening to a message and saying, yes, I understand your message. And there's a difference between that and then someone actually, I suppose, I don't know, adopting it as part of their worldview. Like there's, yeah, I don't know, just thinking generally though.
It's probably what Zoe said in terms of receiving a message, but, you know, you can receive the message and not act on it. You can receive a message and act on it. So I guess, from what I'm hearing from you, Tim, it's more an effective message or an effective messenger is someone that can convey a message so that people can actually not only understand what's being communicated but also feel the need to act on it.
Yeah, I think because it's like an effective message may not even be acted upon immediately necessarily. How you define that action may not be very straightforward either. But I'm thinking about ideas which, how do I say this, like arrive into someone's worldview and stay there. So they're sticky and they actually shape how someone sees things and it transforms the way that they see things. I feel like those are the most effective messages. And maybe I would very broadly define effective messengers in general as people who have the ability, whether that be skill or power or whatever, to affect that kind of change. Yeah, don't know.
So that might be going back to something that we've discussed before around our connection with the messenger. So are they potentially part of our daily lives? Are these people more likely to have an effect on us when they communicate, when they convey a message? But I guess, you know, anyone can have an impact on anyone. So, yeah, what are you?
Maybe that's a good way to look at it. So, yeah, maybe instead of like trying to like isolate a messenger, you know, within a very complex kind of reality, but we in fact look at everything as messengers, animate, inanimate, people, non-people, and just try and understand that in fact daily we are receiving many messages from a lot of different types of messengers, however we want to define it, and they all shape our perspective on climate change and our worldviews and these sorts of things. I suppose what we might want to try and understand more deeply specifically is what can we learn from any or all of these messages and the messages and how they're delivered, and take that on board if we ourselves are trying to be effective messengers and communicating with people who may think very different things to us, communicating with people who may not really know a lot about a lot of these issues which are important to us, mm-hmm. on climate and things like that. Has anyone ever had a conversation and felt like they're really sort of, they were very aware that they were a messenger trying to deliver information on climate change or other environmental issues to someone who maybe didn't, you know, wasn't really aware of these sort of issues?
Yes, Tim. So this brings me to one of the conversations I had with my colleague last year, where we were sort of discussing generally about normal things, and when we came upon what's happening with our world in terms of climate change, we sort of differed quite a bit there. And my argument was, I'm a student of climate change at a university here in Melbourne, and I actually look at the scientific papers that present evidence on how the climate is changing and has changed over the past couple of hundred years compared to before, and how humans are actually causing it. And I got a response from him saying that he pulled out his phone and showed me this guy who is supposedly a climate scientist for the last 30 years, and he's actually refuting this evidence. And it's actually from a website. So that made me wonder what actually made him trust that messenger instead of me as a student. So yeah, that made me think, what could I do better to explain my point of view? Yeah.
It's just so interesting that so much belief and trust and power can go to something on a phone, like it's two-dimensional and it's inanimate, and that can be strong enough to completely convince someone of something. Whereas you have a real person who's yourself, who's studying, you know, this topic, you know, who's a colleague, so they're not a stranger, they're familiar. Yet it's in that situation, not even enough to sort of maybe bring someone around to aligning, you know, with your understanding of what the facts are.
Yeah, in a way, because I felt like we connected quite a bit on other things, but just when it came to climate change, we sort of had completely opposite views of what was happening. So it made me wonder, is it that when some people do not like to accept the fact that we're causing this change to the planet, or is it that they truly believe that we don't have any part in the climate that is changing? Yeah.
Can I just say something that I don't, you know, I haven't really thought about too much, but I think people want to believe the messengers and they align themselves with the messengers and they trust the messengers that make them feel safe, and or they make them feel more powerful, let's say. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking of like Trump here as a messenger, mm-hmm. and sending out messages to a very large following. And I've never existed in that reality in America, but there's something in that that has been enough to motivate people to vote or to take action or to, you know, be violent in some situations. And I feel like I don't want to think that those people are bad people, but I think that people lean to skepticism or they align themselves with, you know, denial camps and things because it's a group that they can readily join because they don't feel like they can join, I don't know, like the science or the people with in line with the science or something, perhaps. And I know this conversation is not supposed to be about, you know, climate denial and that sort of thing, but that's sort of what I think.
I think people seek out confirmation bias in whatever realm it is that you're talking about. If you, you know, it's to bring it down to a really personal and relatable level, if you wake up thinking that you're going to have a bad day, your brain will cherry pick everything of your day that is bad and you will focus on that. And I think that people do that with really complex ideas as well. And with how you both were talking there, I find it really interesting. I don't talk about climate change a lot with in my life. I talk about like environmental issues. Like I'll talk about maybe like a specific species or like a wetlands or a grasslands or a drought. But I don't talk about climate change. I'll talk about climate justice. And I used to work as like a fundraiser for Greenpeace for many years. So it used to be my daily talks with everyone, and people get really divisive about it. And then now, as intensity is ramped up, and people focus on these persuasive conversations, and like, you know, you want people to end up like on your side, thinking what you think. It becomes a power play, your conversation. And I sort of say that in quotation marks because it's not a conversation, it's a game. If you're wanting to get people to hear, it is a power play. And it's such a sort of like loaded time, and people are so strange and people are scared. And whilst people might deny climate change, they don't deny drought or the climate impacts that they're living through. And people are scared. Like, it's particularly like driving through country Queensland. This is pre-COVID. And we went and visited our farmer friends who, I mean, they're not even climate deniers, but they've just not seen conditions like this. And there's big fear. And I think coming to people with like aggression or that, you know what's best isn't useful. And I think that's why a lot of the new sort of endorsed ways of messaging are less abrasive and more sort of level, so that people can come around to the idea without having that fear. Like there are new psychology degrees that are being delivered in Australia that are focused on environment psychology, because there are so many new mental health conditions, because we've all become so scared and so angry and so hurt. Like it's called PTSD, climate anxiety. Like I think it's really important to acknowledge the state of the audience, because we feel these fears as well. And we feel powerless as well. And if you start trying to talk to someone as though, like, you know, it's that whole like Matilda spiel, you know, like I'm big and you're small, I'm right and you're wrong, like fall in line. And that's not helpful. That's not what people need to hear.
Mm.
So
you're thinking about concrete examples, tangible examples, or more or less tangible, relatable. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's what I think. I think people need that, and people, particularly given the context that we live in now with the pandemic, people want to feel grounded. And so bringing it back to smaller things, tangible things that you have agency over, like protecting your local wetlands, and you can go and get involved in those things, and then understand that protecting the wetlands protects the water system, which protects the tributaries, which is helping the oceans stay, you know, not acidic. You know, you can then bring those connections in a positive lens, which will help us feel like we have agency over something that's really, really terrifying and immobilizing.
So in order to tackle such a wicked and intangible problem, you think it's helpful when we communicate to break it down to the bits that we can actually address and potentially have a positive impact on. And yeah, positive impact on. And
it, I forgot it depends. The other thing that, like, it depends what you're like, who you are, where you are, who you're talking to. But I think for me that's really helpful, and I don't need the whole thing because, like, most people are there. Most people know, you know, humans, we're part of the ecosystem and we need to consciously engage with it to look after our home. Most humans agree with that. And if you can follow narratives in that line, a lot of people really get on board who are across party lines, who are across different, you know, different beliefs, different cultures, different locations, can agree with that more easily. But when you start dealing with, like, things that are more abstract and less relatable, like climate change as a big, messy thing, it's almost too overwhelming for our brains to understand.
So in that reality, do we therefore, or is there a greater need for trusted messengers who rely on the facts, I guess, like come from a scientific, factual angle? Do we need more of those types of people who are trusted to sort of take away this enormity of the issue?
I don't think it's necessarily about the facts. It's about the relationship, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can convey facts and make them more applicable, like you use an example or you, yeah, as sorry as that, you can talk about wetland and convey facts that way, but you make it a little bit more tangible, more relatable, more understandable by a wider audience. So I don't think it's necessarily about the factual background that the messenger has to have, but the messenger has to first know the audience and know how to connect with the audience and what might they need to hear to feel inspired, empowered, and engaged.
Yeah, because, like, what I think would be an effective messenger is someone who has, or someone or something that has a reciprocal relationship with the audience that sparks a action, positive change. And so that you're looking for something really different. And so that's why for me bringing that tangibility is important, because that's something for people to be like, oh, cool, like, actually I can do that. Let's do that.
I think that's really interesting, Zoe, because although having studied climate change and going regularly through the news of what's happening across the world, I do feel overwhelmed and powerless in terms of my own actions, because although I try to do the best that I can, I still feel that I'm not doing enough. So I don't think it's just up to the messenger to convey the facts or just the importance. I think it's more of what I'd like to call change agents that are needed across the world to deliver messages, as you said, to inspire action and maybe add those small changes which would eventually become the bigger one.
I think that's such a useful perspective, Fani, because it's important, I suppose, that we don't get too sucked into just thinking like one messenger, one message, like, will create all the impact that we want to see. But in fact, it's countless messages and messengers over time that make up a much larger movement, collective, system, culture, a milieu, like some sort of environment that we all like are a part of. That's just a really interesting and important way to look at messages and messengers, I think, within the context of this podcast, like how we talk about climate change. I've never really thought of it like that before. I think that's really interesting.
Oh, I think what we should say here is that in the show notes, we'll have some links to places where you can go to see if you are inspired to act and get involved, and we'll put together a nice list of things for you to check out. But continue, Fani.
I just wanted to raise the point that Emily raised about the reciprocal relationship. I think each of us has little agency to impact what the things that are happening around us, and having that reciprocal relationship in understanding each other and communicating things is really important to get across these sort of complex messages. It's not just we happen to trust one single messenger on everything. So yeah, as I said earlier, it's up to, I think, every one of us or a lot of change agents to do that work in terms of communicating the importance of things that are happening across the world.
That makes me think about the difference between information and knowledge, and maybe the difference between knowledge and wisdom, and how a lot of, I suppose, the way we transfer information, knowledge, and wisdom is often dependent on our interpersonal relationships, the nature of those over time, and our personal relationships with people. And yet we are often asked as citizens to trust in people we don't know and people who are affirmed by powers that we are unfamiliar with. So there's this sort of anonymity and gap between us, let's say, as and part of an audience, and some of the sort of societies and political societies proclaimed messengers, like people who we have to trust. I'm sort of thinking a little bit here about how information about the pandemic has been relayed to the public. We don't know the chief medical officers, we don't know them personally, but yet we place a lot of trust, or some of us place trust, in the messages that they deliver. I think that's something that comes to mind. Are there any final thoughts that anyone has, or reflections that they wanted to raise?
I think something important is that, yeah, you're not just a bystander as an audience. You're not just there soaking up information. Like it does, the reciprocal nature of the relationship goes both ways. And I think that's where we see the most impactful messages and the most impactful action is when, you know, and we can all think, like, we've all heard someone speak and who has been there with that community or with that place or with that being, you know, on the regular, and they are speaking so passionately, and you know that they are there with them, and you feel the reciprocal nature of their connection, and you're part of that, and that sparks that that call to action. And so I think it's just as important that as an audience, because we all play both roles, that we partake as well, that we can guide our messengers into how we would like to be messaged. Such cool words. I'm so sorry, everyone.
No, the that's sentiment great. Was I love there. That. No, I love that.
But yeah, like be active. Like it does pay off. That's a horrible economic metaphor I just employed there. Oof.
It's not your fault. It's a structural thing.
It is, but I've been consciously working on it for a few years, and it's deeply embedded.
That's how deep it is. Yeah.
Conversations like these, calling yourself in kind ways, and being I think that's another thing, is that having empathy for the audience and the messenger is really critical, because we're all learning together.
Definitely. Yeah, I think the shaming and blaming is is not going to get us anywhere. But if we can convey message in the sense of we're in this together, we're working on this together, this is what you can do, focusing on the positive things and being hopeful in the way that we communicate, I think that, I mean, naturally you'll have a more positive impact. I hope so anyway.
Yeah. And bolstering those like key messengers is essential for me. Pacific Climate Warriors are such a I don't know, for me they're really important.
No, back the messengers that are important to you. That's important because we have that agency as listeners. Every listen is powered to the messengers.
Mm.
You know, we can be active in how we want to be messaged. I think is a great takeaway. So I think it's time that we'll bring this conversation to a close. But thank you very much, Rosie, Vani, Zoe, and Amelie for being part of episode 8. It was great chatting with everyone. And thank you, Rosie, for your back-end assistance today, taking notes and guiding us, maybe being a messenger non-vocally today.
Yeah, I'd just like to say a lot of times I sort of get into this internal conflict of what can I do best while consuming messages. So I think I'd just like to say that whatever you consume in terms of messages, if you have the capacity to turn it into an action, I think that would be a really great thing to do, especially if you're passionate about environmental issues.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really pragmatic way to think about things, Fani, and I think that's important. I would add to that as well, think about how you're listening to messages or listening to messengers and how that may or may not transform what you believe or what you see, what your worldview is. And I think it's useful to kind of have this filter on all the time and say, all right, that is useful. That is constructive. This is helping me to be a better person, or this is helping me to understand things more critically. That in itself could be a form of action, like internal action perhaps as well. But yeah, great point.
I just wanted to add that when you're communicating something, I felt like I make so many mistakes, but having made those mistakes is making me better as a communicator and messenger. So, yeah, would like to encourage to keep making mistakes as well.
I love that. All about mistakes. Learning. All learning opportunities.
Yeah, I think we should just get rid of the word mistakes. I don't think it's a good way to... I don't think it's a healthy way to look at the actions that we take. Like, if you're courageous enough to have a conversation about something that makes you uncomfortable and you're not sure if you can do it, and you're not 100% sure of, you know, information or the words, but you do it anyway, that's worthwhile. You know, I think there are things to be gained from that. But I suppose, yeah, I agree. I would maybe take it another step as well. And just, you know, mistakes are not mistakes, you know, they're part of this process, that Zoe mentioned about learning and developing and getting better. And I think it makes me think of one of my favorite movies, Coach Carter, if anyone's seen it. It's a great basketball movie. But basically, like, when you allow yourself to be more vulnerable, others around you also feel like that they have the ability to step out and be themselves and try and that sort of thing. And that's an incredibly empowering thing to do, to, you know, let down your guard and to say that it's okay. I'm happy to be vulnerable and make mistakes in quotation marks. No one in the podcast can see me doing the air quotes, but yeah, doing them. So yeah, that's what it makes me think of. Anyways, it's actually getting quite late at the time of this recording. I know everyone will probably be ready to go have some dinner. I can see Zoe's pretty keen. She's doing a bit of a dance, doing a pre-dinner dance.
Dinner shoulders.
So just want to say thank you very much to everyone for listening, for taking the time to be here, and we look forward to hearing or seeing you in the next episode.
This podcast has been created and produced by Tim, Emily, Fani, Ewan, Zoe, and Rosie, with support from the Climactic Collective. This podcast has been made for educational purposes only, and any advice and information presented is general in nature and does not consider your specific circumstances. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed by individuals do not reflect the views of the Climactic Collective. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating as it helps others find us. If you're looking for more podcasts on similar topics, make sure to visit the Climactic Collective website, climactic.com.au. Thanks for listening.